If trouble was money, I swear I'd be a millionaire. Money, baby, I swear I'll be a millionaire. Have money to spend, yeah. Worry.
Blues guitarist Albert Collins, one of my very, very favorites, with If Trouble Was Money. He says he swears he'll be a millionaire. It's from his 1984 album, Live in Japan. He died after a battle with cancer in his Las Vegas home some many years ago. He was 61 years old. And it kind of fits in the current times. We have John McCain, soon to take leave of us, finally. We have Aretha Franklin taking leave of us also. The battle, all with the battle with cancer. But you know what? The thing is that their lives, they made their statement in life. They made their statement in life. There's no need for sorrow or, you know, people being inconsolable with grief. They did what they came on this earth to do and did it very, very well. So that is the upside. We all have to go. But it is a comfort when you leave this life, wherever it is that we're going next, but you leave this life having substantial evidence that you have accounted for yourself with the talents that you've been given, and you've made a difference in people's lives while you were here. And that's all you could hope for, really. So I don't subscribe to the notion that we ought to be completely lost in our grief and we just seem to have no energy to go on. That's really not paying tribute. That's really not honoring the people who have passed. Just look for the lesson that they gave us, which is to the best of their ability, they used their talents and their skills and their knowledge to make life in some way easier for the rest of us. That's enough of a statement, and that's enough of an accounting. And if we can all kind of reach that point, hey, we would have achieved the best thing in life, which is to know that you have done an appreciable service to others. Well, midterm elections are just around the corner, and candidates are vying for office. They are honing their messages, And their sales pitches to voters are about where they stand on key issues and why they will be better legislators than their opponents. That's really what's being hammered home now. But they'll sell us whatever it is they think we'll buy. But the question is, what will we buy? What are we buying? What are our standards? What are our priorities? And it's not whether we fit into their priorities or are in sync with their priorities and their ways of thinking and doing things, but quite the other way around. Are their priorities in sync with ours? And that's the age-old question. I don't know, and I don't want to sound like a downhearted person. I used to be exceedingly excited about politics. I mean, really excited, even as a child. I inherited this trait, I think, from my father. He was a very political man. And even though he was not elected to anything, people used to act as if he was, but he just was that involved. And not in the mechanics of politics, so to speak. But he was involved in politics in a way that people seemed to be responding to. It was about caring. He would want to know whether a certain area of a village had water. What could we do about getting them water? And he was not above, getting water, putting it on a truck, and going to get people without water the water that they needed for themselves and their families, their children. So that was the politics he practiced, the pragmatic approach, which is seeing to people's needs. And it's just as an ordinary citizen, and I think a touch more than that, to be honest, because, this is what political parties do. But he was not into the machinery of the party. His thing was that political parties should be responding to what people really want and what they really need more than anything else. And they will remember that. They would value that. And they would see it as a human to human investment. You know what I mean? You're caring. You're not waiting to be asked. You're responding because you see the need. And that is the politics I'm hoping that we can reinvigorate in our communities. The established order, I mean, they have their own way of doing things because politics has become a way of life. By that I mean there's so much resting on today's meaning of politics. But it wasn't too long ago that there was a different reading, and politics was a calibration of the ability to meet a need against the demand for a need, the demand for a service. And in this regard, we have many examples of politicians who understood politics that way. That in the end, it is about meeting people's needs and elevating the human spirit and giving people a sense of hope that they can, you know, they can see things through. And it was a matter of practicality. It's not about people sitting around tables having, you know, a nice lager, you know, pontificating about politics. Politics was a practice. It was not a theoretical thing. It was a practice. And so we've fallen way off of that track, it seems to be. And politics has become something else. Are you with the winners, or are you going to hedge your bets and stick with the losers? You know, all of your resources that you can spare will go toward supporting a thing called a party or a person affiliated with such a party. There's no real connection between this entity called a political party and the bottom line, which is, to what degree does this party, this system, to what degree is it in sync with the people? Or is it about launching somebody into political orbit, and then once their elections are, to keep that person there as an asset of the party? A long time ago, I think I've shared this with you, I stopped voting. No matter how I looked at it, I mean, how I dissected it, I turned it upside down, inside out, and it made no sense to me what this thing called politics was all about. A lot of money being spent on posters and campaign paraphernalia, and you have to have a headquarters, and it's a thing about how many ads you have in play. Are you in the newspapers or on radio? Are you showing the signs that you are a promising candidate because you have organized yourself into a machine, you know, part of the larger machinery of the party? But there was very little that I could detect of a connection between the political candidate and the party of the candidate and the objective conditions of life in the community. There was just no connection there. So politics to me began to be more and more a personal quest. A different way of measuring personal achievement. Nothing more than that. And I felt every time we came to elections, I would detect in myself a rising tide of anger and disappointment. As if to say, these people don't get it. They don't get it. And politics absolutely should not be this. The never-ending quest for election and re-election, and the priorities are to self and then party. I've never seen, in these many years, I've never seen people say, look, we have to take a different approach here. We have to start interconnecting. We have to start a whole new line of approach to problem solving. And it's not about geographic boundaries. It's not about religious differences. It's not about any of that, because in the end, we all stuck in a place where we shouldn't be. We should be far ahead. We should be, in fact, to use that word, visionary. We should have been so visionary that by now we should have dispensed with that old practice of, old-time political boss and the old political plantation and all of that. We should be seeing the big picture. And the big picture has to do with broadening the scope and looking structurally at problems and heading them off at the pass and trying new things. I go back to my father again. He lived in a little town. And he had a few businesses in this town. But his whole attitude had always been, what's good for everybody? The town needed schools. There weren't enough schools. There weren't any schools at one point. So it wasn't the government that led the fight and solved the problem. Bunch of ordinary guys, Lodge brothers from the. We used to laugh at them, but the International Court of Foresters. Yeah, well, you can laugh all you want, but guess what? There was a two-story school with running water and toilets, which no school had had. And this was just getting the men together and building a school. Why? Because the children need it. It's not that complicated. And if we can't do it all at once, we'll do it little by little until we accomplish it. That was the attitude. We had a woman in our town who had 22 children. Okay, just saying it makes me hurt. Her husband was a lowly police officer. What did the women of the town do? There was no meeting held, there were no discussions. There was not a gathering, but everybody knew what they had to do. My mother would load up a little cart, which my brothers would pull down to Mrs. M's house, loaded with staples, flour and oil and sugar and whatnot. Because every mother understood that whether you have two children or 22 children, you have to feed them. They have to eat. And that is how that problem was alleviated in large measure. The women independently. There was, again, I have never seen a meeting called or anything like that. It was just the understanding that as mothers, they could not see a mother with 22 children trying to figure out how to get them fed every day. They have to eat. So that was, to me, the essence of politics. Solving problems. These people are our neighbors. We live in the same town. We live in the under the same conditions. Some may be a bit better off than others. But what was the point of taking satisfaction in that and leaving it at that? Some are better off. We belong to the better off people. We have no reason to care about those who are not. Now, simple, direct, very unsophisticated, you would say. And yet it is the essence of where we ought to be and what we ought to do. We've long lost the notion that we have any responsibility to each other. That's, in my view, a large reason for how communities disintegrated to the point where people just don't care about other people. And they don't see the connection as being necessary in maintaining a cohesive community. Instead, the political machines have somehow persuaded us that politics is a seasonal event, and we get all excited because we find a person called a candidate, and the candidate is the important thing, and the party is the important thing. No, it's not. The connection between and among each other, that's the important thing, and we've lost that. And so I turned off of politics. Apart from the standard reasons of dishonesty and money and bribery and all these other things connected to it. And I'm not a purist, understand that. I'm not a purist in that sense at all. The whole point of politics, it seems to me, is preservation of community, preservation of life in our community. And a system that helps us remain together, relatively intact, relatively protected against the vagaries out there. When we operate as a community and when we operate as a like-minded community, In growing up, for example, when, you know, the new school year begins, what was all the activity about? People looking for their godparents because books have to be bought. Textbooks have to be bought. Book bags have to be bought. We have to take care of children. You can't allow a child to be seen looking haggard and worn. Where are your books? If you have no books, we'll see to it that you get some books. You're a student. You have to have books. It's a simple concept. But it is, in the end, one of the most radical concepts that we could ever adopt. The idea that we are a community We have shared values. We have shared connections with each other, irrespective of what's going on out there. We are taking care of each other to the best of our ability. And the resources are to be shared. So that's how I came to understand politics. What it really should be about. I haven't seen it in recent years. I haven't seen any aspect of that practiced anywhere. And I'm thinking it's time we re-examine this thing called politics, because as the years go by, it's more and more meaningless to me. There's no real, it is just an exercise, a futile exercise. Your power is given away. Whatever power that you have, it is directed toward individualism. And a party that may or may not be in sync with some of the basics that you think would come into play, because these are the things that hold communities together. This is the way that each of us, if things work right, each of us derives a sense of belonging and a sense of authority, because the system allows us to participate that way. That's not happening. So I ask you, in the scheme of things, what has politics come to mean to you? Do you see it as a serviceable thing? Or is it the mindless exercise of a thing called voting, and then there is this other ethereal idea that by doing this thing called voting, we are participating in building a democratic society. You believe all of that? Let me know. We'll take this break and come back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888, right after this.
I swear, I ain't gonna tell you no lies. Excuse me.
You'd be surprised that this kind of music really gets to me. I really love it, and nobody's better at it than Albert Collins on the electric blues guitar. There's also a person who performed regularly with him who would make you just cry, Michael Moore. They're both gone now, but their music testifies to their accomplishments before they left. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Hi, good day, Beatrice.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Always good. I am persevering, always persevering, because that's how life is designed. If you don't persevere, you will jump off the bridge. Beatrice, I must say this. The question you ask, I think we the people, and every one of us, excluding none, are guilty. Even this program you have, which is a wonderful program, how many times, you know, like we get on these programs and we pontificate and intellectualize and we try to sound good and we discuss and we romanticize history, romanticize politics. Look at the approach to the Obamas and the Clintons. It's nothing but people seeking after symbolism. And when people come on the program, people like myself, we try to simplify it to make people realize that politics is not this intellectual gyration that people seem to want, and the display of our vocabularies, etc. It's not about that. Politics simply is about designing a government for the good of the people. And we continue to seek these photo ops and to say, oh, the first black president and the first this and this. What does that have to do with feeding the people? Look at the way people avoided criticizing Obamas and the Clintons, etc. These people, most people, are not interested in politics for the good of the people. They're interested in politics like many people in the theater. You know, we like to say, oh, I'm a famous actor, and I have this actor friend who's on this, and you know, he got this $6 million movie, and the Moniques discussing how much they got paid or didn't get paid, etc. And so all this intellectual garbage is not doing any good for us. And politics, simply put, like I had an intention of going back to Jamaica, and I still do, of setting up a political system, and I call it the people's referendum system, where we design a government where the people vote on all the legislation. You know, if the taxes are supposed to be raised, the people vote on that. If we decide that there will be no taxes, the people vote on that. We get rid of, like, say, public transportation for profit, and rather we say, okay, instead of designing a government for profit, we design a government for the good of the people. Government should function just like how we see the ant community function. You see all the ants, they're running about, and they're always working for the good of the people. Government should work like the way our body works. When we ingest food, all the nutrients goes to every part of the body. There's not one part that's excluded. Even our little fingernails is fed. And that's how, and the brain is working for the good of the entire body. Government should work just like our brain works.
I'm going to hone in on your keyword here. That's what should happen. It isn't happening. So what do you do now?
This is what we do. We who have the awareness like you and myself, instead of getting involved in all these intellectual gymnastics, we should sit down. And when I speak about educating the people, like several times I've called in and I've spoken about educating the people. What I mean is educating the people along these lines of thinking, not about saying go get a PhD, etc., but to make them understand what is the purpose of government, what are we in relationship to each other. And if we can do that and then start to organize the people around the very thing you were talking about just now, then we would have the people in a different state of mind, instead of me and everybody on this rich get rich scheme, etc. That's the kind of a mindset we need, a mindset in which we are all, the government teaches us to be our brothers and sisters keepers. That's what we should be working towards. And it's not about no Bernie Sanders and no Jill Stein. You know, I'm not looking for a Jill Stein or a Bernie Sanders. I'm looking for a system. And it should be a system where whenever the politician is not serving the people, that politician should be jettisoned. And no politician should live in any fancy house if one person is homeless. And every community
should
be
designed.
Well, let me ask
you. I want to ask you. I mean, I'm clear about what it is you're saying. And in a sense, it's an idealistic outlook. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It just means that certain standards are to rise above us all. That is exactly what that means. But what you're outlining is going to take time. It's going to take time to bring people along. It's going to take time for people to see the need for something like this. It's going to be, it's going to take time for people to sign on to a system that is new. In the meantime, you still have to alleviate suffering. You still have to solve problems. So you work with what you have. Is there anything that you have now that you see that, well, you could start there, even if you tinker with it a little bit, but there's some part of the system that is salvageable and that could be used as a starting point?
Well, okay. I would say, yes, it's true that we cannot just abandon... let me back up. We need to abandon this system. And we need to, the idea I'm talking about, we have to stop saying things like choosing between the lesser of two evils. We have to stop talking about it takes time. And we have to say, okay, it takes time, so let's start the process. And but in the meantime, yes, it's just like you're educating your child, but at the same time, you still feed them. Maybe we organize things like what the Black Panther had organized, you know, ways to guarantee that people will be taken care of, like the breakfast program, and also ways that to guarantee that health needs will be met. Maybe we come together and pool our resources together and say, build houses for those who have none. We the people could do that in the meantime, or not. I shouldn't say we the people, because if we rely on the people, they are already duped by the system. So people like you and I, say, okay, in the meantime, let's be trying to organize them as much as possible and realize that it is a daunting task. It is not some overnight thing. You know, we have to stop looking for the quick fixes. And to tell the truth, you trees, I don't think this process would be long. You know, I think that it could be quicker than we think.
All right. Well, let's see what people are thinking about what you've offered so far today. Jose from Rosedale, you're on the air. What do you think of Lincoln's thoughts?
Well, I've heard the brother on many occasions, and I agree with many of the things that he has said. But I have come to the conclusion a long time ago that we... If we think that the system that has had so many years, so many centuries of experience in putting this cold, hard, and vicious thing together is going to be giving any quarters anytime soon, then we just seem to another kind of thinking in La La Land. I don't think there's anybody around who really believes that this system is not going to change, and they have had so much time of completing the system and making it what it is. And I have referred time and time again to the approach that our ancestor Fannie Lou Hamer. Her approach to it, because we're in a system that we have not really attacked it in a different way. Most of our people believe that we have to be a member of this party or that party to bring about change in our community, and that approach has not worked. It never worked and never will work until we come to the realization that those two parties, they have no good intentions towards us, especially, but to poor people. But we especially, because we have to start thinking about us. Everybody else is out there fighting on their behalf. But we have to think about what is right for us. So until we can understand that the only way we are going to make any kind of inroad into this vicious and evil system is by the coming together of our people. I heard the brother mention going back to Jamaica and create a political party and whatever and so forth. And I want him to know that he's going to run into the same situation down there. Mr. Garvey created the first political party in Jamaica, the PPP, the People's Political Party. And Mr. Garvey knew that anything else that the system put together is not going to work into our interest because we have no control over it. If you don't control the system that is there as overlord over you, you're not going to make any headway with it. So if he goes to Jamaica and he plans to create a political party to challenge that corrupt system that is there, that where our these charlatans who call themselves politicians, who are not, and they're nothing but pawns of a political system, they're pawns of a economic system that has tentacles not only in Jamaica, but they get their orders from some of these countries, from the U.S. and Britain and so forth, because many of us go around thinking these little satellite places are independent. Far from the truth. They are being manipulated and maneuvered, their currencies, everything about these small places are being manipulated. So, my brother, I sympathize with you because I'm in the same boat as you are. Whatever happens in the system affects not only you, but affects me also. And that is why I don't see any light at the end of the tunnel. That is why, my professor, I try to spend some of my time in doing things that is tangible, things that have some little effect. Yesterday, a couple of friends and I, we visited our brothers in a correctional facility upstate. These brothers created an organization that embraces the teachings of Marcus Garvey, the philosophy and opinions of Marcus Garvey, and they invited us to come there and to be with them because every year at this time of the year, they have a event for Marcus Garvey. They try to get it on his birthday, but since they don't control the system decides which day they should use. So yesterday was the day we got. And we went there, we took this journey after going through all kind of hoops and loops and things. At one time, the driver was scrapped from the list. We didn't have a driver. We had to find another way to get to this place. But we got there. And the brothers, they were so happy to see us. And my professor, I'm telling you, it was a day well spent to see these young men in this institution languishing there. Many of them have such great talents, which they exhibited yesterday at this event. They had a talk show that they put together where they had the elders on one side and the youngsters on one side, and this brother who they got for the moderator, he was out of this world. And they asked questions of each side, and they would question each other. It was a very, very refreshing experience that we need to see out here. Those things should be here in our community, but because of the bureaucracy and whatever is involved, they won't be able to show those things on the outside. And I want people to know that these young men are in there. They shouldn't be forgotten. Not because they are there for whatever reason, serving time, but they are human beings, and I don't think they should lose their rights as human beings because they're behind in this control condition. And all I try to remind them that your bodies might be controlled in this setting, but don't let your mind be enslaved also. Let your mind wander. Let it learn. Learn everything you can. If there's something that is in here that you don't have, try and lobby for it so you can learn it. Try and expand your mind so when you come back out here in this even harsh world that with this bigger prison that we're all in, when you come back, you'll be in a little better position to cope with it because we don't want you coming out and going back in there. And so these are some of the
things. Thank you, Jose. We have to move on. I'm afraid we are very tight on time. But we got your point. And we still have to answer the question, what should our understanding of politics be? What is politics supposed to do? Thank you so much for contributing today. Jeff from New Jersey, what are your thoughts about politics? is it? Well, what is it supposed to do, and what is it supposed to be?
Politics is supposed to take care of the. It's supposed to be the community taking care of those who can't take care of themselves, taking care of the big things that we can't do ourselves, like roads and bridges. And it's the governance to kind of restrict and protect people from, you know, polluters and all that other sort of things. You know, it's supposed to put in protections for the people and manage our collective monies and, you know, direct it, you know, defense and all that other stuff where it's supposed to go. Where we can, I know there are examples that people are doing the community thing. You're not going to hear about it because that's not something that people want to see in the mainstream media, and it makes it look like politicians and police officers and to the sorts are not doing their job. I know that there was, where I lived, there was a community where they were government housing, and the drug deals were people come in and buy drugs and do this and that. So the men of the community put up cinder blocks in 2x4s. And they sat at the entrance of the community. And if you didn't know anybody going in there, they wouldn't let you in. So that's a small example. But here's what happened. The police came and told them they had to take it down. The police told them, we got to. And they allowed it to be there. So we have to understand that these politics on two levels. One, certain communities and people they want to eliminate. They want to get out of the way or take their resources, or they don't care. They just want to dump on. So that's one aspect of it, because that's the corporate aspect of it. The other aspect of it is, look, I think this is actually the best time right now for politics, because we had George W. Bush with their foreign wars, and we understand that we need to pay attention to politics. Now we have a Donald Trump, and we now understand now that we really need to pay attention to the politics and the cabinet members and the people that he surrounds himself with, and that we need to organize, which we have an opportunity to do, to organize and understand that we're not alone, that there are a bunch of people out there that feel the way that a lot of other people do as far as how the country should be going and where it's going to. And we're at the point now where the black or white, you cannot deny that you're poor. You cannot deny that you're worse off. So we have to come together, despite whether or not I want you to marry my sister or not come to my house. We have to understand we're in the same boat. And I think that this is the time that's now. So right now is opportunity. What are we going to do with it? Right now is the opportunity to organize, to make it, because our government is us. It's us. Now, we have some people that have been career politicians. That's the other thing. We understand that career politicians are really not that good. They're not good for us, because eventually they stop working for the people and start working for the people that's going to pay them more money. So we get down to sending an ordinary man to Washington. We get down to sending our neighbor to Washington. And when we start to do that, we will see the positive change. And remember, we have more numbers. That's all we have to do. We don't have to quit. We have to get out there. And I'm sorry, Mama, but we need to vote. You know, we need to vote. We need to vote. Because it's going to be the bullet. It's going to be the bullet about it. I don't want to see you shout up. So
I like the way you put it. I'm sorry, Mama, but you got to vote.
If we get out, there and vote, eventually we can turn the tide. We just cannot quit. We have to get out there and keep pushing and pushing and pushing. Curtis Mayfield said, don't make no sense. If I got my strength, I got to keep on pushing. And that's the idea. Because, listen, in life, we know that our head has always been underwater. But if we stop swimming, we drown. So we have to scrape and do whatever it is we can to put our head up so we can get some air. And once we get some air, we can walk to the beach. Once we walk to the beach, we can lay down on our towels and catch a tan.
Oh, you know what I'm saying? I was born with one, but I'll wear the one that I was born with. I don't need to lay out in the sun.
What?
But you know something? I want to ask you this. Do you see, you speak as a man with a degree of hope. You have hope that these things can happen. Have you asked yourself truly whether this, in fact, could happen.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure it can. We have organizations are in place. We have churches with church groups. You know, there's a Black Association of Ministers. There's Episcopal. And all you have to do is talk to your neighbor. Coordinate a food drive. Coordinate housing building. It's not that hard. It's really not that hard. And like you said, it may take a minute, but it can turn very, very quickly. And I see people wanting to do that. We've always done that. We've always had that community. Now, it may not have been broadcast, but we've always done that in the community. There's always food drives. There's always coat drives. There's always toy drives. You know, Habitats for Humanity. They build houses. Right? Let's put it all together. Get out there and do it. What we have to do is get our faces out of our phones and our TVs, but when we get out there and actually put our hands to something, we're going to change it.
I admire your sense of optimism. I really do. And hopefully you would have inspired someone today to, you know, rethink this thing called community service and politics and get something started. So thanks so much, Jeff, for your call today. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hi, Trace.
Hello.
Beach 45. I had to get it in. I don't have much time. I think it's sheer numbers, Dame, that we're dealing with here right now in this time on this world. You know, back in the old days, you had less people. You could organize back in the 60s. We're not living in the 60s anymore. We should be focusing on controlling population or something, so they don't have to murder people so much. I think it makes me laugh when Bernie talks socialist Democrat. You can have socialism in Norway, Sweden. You only got 40 million people. Or 350 million people in the United States. They do things like Robert Moses did to New York City. You know, you divide everything up and you create slums and you create, you know, you're only doing things good for the wealthy. And that's the predicament we're in here. It's a numbers game. There's too many people. It's not like a small island like Jamaica or Trinidad.
So as there are too many people, how then do you redefine politics in a way that people could change up the way they operate and become more attached to their communities and in building communities? How do you do that?
Well, it's probably impossible to do now, but it would take to stop building these giant cities that everybody wants to flock to and create small communities again where people are all in charge of themselves, their community, to make it great, you know? Like you say in Chicago, why are these people killing each other? They should be working together. But, you know, and then, you know, Henry and the other caller from Chicago feels there's some other force going on there that's doing this stuff. So, you know, it's a catch-22. They have us, and because of the crisis of the world is in today with global warming, there's going to be less food, less land, less water, and there's too many people. We let it get out of control, and I'm not a eugenist or whatever they call that, but we have to face the facts of reality. There's just too many people and not enough to go around for everybody. We have to go back to making small communities where everybody's responsible for each other's back.
Hmm. Well, I don't know how or where you could start with that to arrive at a new understanding of politics, but it certainly is something to consider. Thanks a lot, E.
Thank you.
South Carolina, Khalil, you have the last word today.
Hi, you know, I was really moved by the beginning of your show when you were telling about the stories, and it made me think about how human beings evolved. We would not be here if it weren't for collectivism. human beings would not be here. And it seems as if we have a political party involved in politics, involved in every aspect of our lives, that are social Darwinists, which means you're just out for yourself no matter what. And it's totally antithetical to how we evolved. It's not natural. Things have moved so fast where we've moved away from how we're supposed to be. And that's the only, I can agree with the last caller about a small village, but I really agree with all the other callers. But, you know, I'm not ready to give up yet. I forget the caller's name, but when we were talking about infrastructure and government, that's the place for government, but we also have a place. People have fallen asleep. People are not engaged. And I understand that you don't like to vote. And I don't know if you vote locally or just if it's on the federal level. I don't know. I've never asked you that.
Oh, you know, I look forward to the day when I would be enthusiastic about voting, but I'm not. I haven't been for years, and so I haven't voted.
I looked
forward to voting, and I was the world's most committed voter. I used to arrive at the polling site earlier than the people who were to run the polling site. I was very enthusiastic about it.
Beautiful. Were you like me? Were you looking to see who was there before you? You look at the signature, like, oh, I was 28 today.
No, we would get there long before they even set up. But the thing is that the whole system, as I saw it, as I began to study it more and more, seemed totally contradictory to me. And then I got offended. I got angry that the system seemed to be playing a joke on me. You know, I'm not factored into the further decisions that have to be made. Just show up, flick a lever, and go home, get lost. That's not what I bargained for as the political process. I want more than that. And it's become to me a almost blasphemous what voting has been and what it has become. So I look forward to the day when I would feel really enthusiastic about voting again. But so far, it's not happening.
You, Trees, I have to say this. I'm upset about yesterday's show, and I really want to talk with you about it.
Okay.
I'm telling you, I'm on fire. I could not sleep. I listened to the podcast. I cannot sleep.
Oh, no, you got to sleep. You know, what you have to do is to find a way to understand things in perspective. I'm in control.
You, Trees, you beat him in the debate. You know what I'm talking about. Now, I respect education. However, he let his emotions get over. His arguments were so specious toward the end. It was ridiculous.
Well, we'll talk about it. But in the meantime, here's the thing. Don't stay there. The idea is when you should be able to entertain people's ideas, no matter how loathsome you find them or how much you disagree. But it was also to demonstrate the fact that people on the right and people on the left are finding more and more that they have in common in fighting the system. That was interesting to me. But we'll talk. Thanks, everybody, for contributing today. And we meet up again with each other tomorrow. Thank you so much.